Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode of TFL Talk. And Tommy, we're talking about my favorite car segment, or at least one of them. And you know what that is?
Yeah, it's the compact convertible.
It is not. I do not fit in any compact convertible. But instead, we're talking about the exact opposite segment, which are big-ass SUVs. Like?
Well, like the Sequoia, the Armada, the Land Cruiser, the Tahoe Suburban. What about the Ford Expedition?
Not talking about that. We haven't driven it. In fact, the ones that you've mentioned, we've all been either behind the wheel or have had hands-on with in the last few months.
Whoa, Andre's driven the Expedition.
Well, he's not here. The last time I was behind the wheel was like 2 years ago, and I have completely forgotten. So let's talk about the ones that I remember. In fact, we have an Armada sitting in the parking lot.
Yeah, the recently refreshed Nissan Armada, that's right. And we are going to go over the pros and cons of each in this big segment and talk about which ones you should buy and which ones you should avoid.
Yeah, basically any of the three-row SUVs, be they luxury or not, that tow over like 8,000 pounds.
Yeah, that's right. So the big boys. But before we get into that, let's talk about what's been going on in the news.
Are we doing a new news segment?
Well, we're going to try, see right. If you guys like it. So over at tflcar.com, we've got the latest and greatest happenings in the automotive world. And there's been some interesting stuff going on. So first of all, Citroën.
Wow.
If you're from the U.S., the French car
Citroën?
Company. Yeah, Citroën. Exactly. Citroën is making a comeback to the U.S. in a small way. Apparently, they're going to bring their little urban car, the ME, to Washington, D.C.
Yeah, of course, you know, Citroën is part of, used to be PSA, now is Stellantis.
Citroën.
Which purchased FCA and decided to rename them as a... as a erectile dysfunction medication,
Stellantis?
Apparently.
You don't like Stellantis?
You know what Stellantis is? I think that's one of like the original Greek gods or something. It's just a really bad name.
But Citroën will hopefully bring some cars over in maybe big and small fashion. And the ME is this little itty tiny thing. In Europe, you can pick it up for just a few thousand euros.
Are you saying the brand's bringing the coming over here or just a car?
Well, currently I think it's just a car. It's going to be like one of these little car sharing things.
Yeah.
But in Europe, you can buy it for a few thousand euros brand new. It only goes like 25 miles an hour. But it's supposed to go a whopping like 30 miles on a charge or something. And it looks really, really cool. I love the idea of buying a new car for just a few grand.
And by the way, we have a special guest on this podcast and he's sitting right behind you.
That's right. Our puppy Blaze, if you hear some panting or if you see a tail wag through, that is Blaze snooping around our podcast studio here. So other news in the automotive world, we've seen...
Can I get to the biggest news?
What?
This is, in my mind, the biggest news. So I was watching Bill Maher.
Yep.
And he does this segment called New Rules at the end of his show, which I really enjoy. Oh, there he goes. Nope. Oh, he's a big Bill Maher fan, apparently.
This is Blaze.
Yeah, I know. I'm talking about Blaze.
Yes, you've got to clarify for the podcast listeners.
Exactly. And he did this segment about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, right? And he made a really interesting point, and I think this is a point that's going to resonate throughout this week, and that is that, you know, the way cryptocurrency works is that there's like one supercomputer that picks a number from zero to infinity, and then there's another supercomputer that tries to figure out what that number is, and that's what's called Bitcoin mining, and that's how you get new Bitcoins. But it uses vast amounts of power, Tommy. It's like vast amounts of power.
Like electricity?
Yeah, according to Maher, and, you know, this is a political show, so let's take that with a grain of salt. But according to him, Bitcoin or cryptocurrency in general uses more power than like Google, Netflix, YouTube, Microsoft combined. In fact, it uses as much power as the entire state of New York, Tommy, which is just a huge amount of power. And much of that, Tommy, comes from non-renewables.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right? So it comes from like coal, some comes from solar. And the problem there, and this is where it gets interesting, and this is where it touches upon our world, is that, as you know, Tesla was founded by the idea of actually helping to eliminate greenhouse gases, you know, getting rid of cars that burn non-renewables. And yet, Tommy, interestingly enough, the founder of Tesla is one of the biggest proponents, supporters. He accepts Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies for the new Teslas. So how do you square that? How do you get a vehicle and a company that was founded on being environmentally conscious that is now supporting by buying cryptocurrency, investing in cryptocurrency, and accepting cryptocurrency, which is, according to at least some of the recent reports, one of the worst things that's happening to environment, because there's even a thought that it uses so much power that it can push us farther into global warming. I don't get how you square those two.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I don't have an answer to that, but
I think that's going to be making news in the future. I think more and more publications are going to be picking up on that and asking that question.
You've got one of the biggest proponents of sustainability and, you know, electrification, and then you've got that those same folks who are really pushing Bitcoin and, as you mentioned, to mine Bitcoin. It's all on computers, and it involves a huge amount of electricity. But if you are interested in an electric car that's also quick but not named Tesla,
yeah,
Ford this week officially announced the GT, Mach-E, the Mach-E GT. Orders open on April 28th, so that was a couple days ago. And it's supposed to be pretty cool in terms of power, torque, horsepower.
If Tommy's having a hard time concentrating, it's because Blaze is munching on his Converse.
Yeah, he's eating my foot right now. This is the puppy lifestyle. I'm sure some of you out there can relate. And then lastly, I want to bring this up too. This is pretty cool. Ow, Blaze. That's a
sharp tooth. Oh, he took a real bite.
He took a real bite of my shoe there. We've heard rumors of Toyota perhaps bringing a new 2- and 3-row SUV to the States because they are dropping $803 million into Indiana. And this is going to be a manufacturing plant, of course, to build 2 new 3-row SUVs.
How about the IDX, Tommy?
Yeah, the IDX. That's another great point, Dad. Volkswagen has an electric car called the ID4. And now they're bringing one out that's going to be all-wheel drive with about 300 horsepower. It's called the GTX.
Yeah.
ID4 GTX.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of like the GTI of the electric car world, except I don't think we're getting it, dude. I think that's been introduced in Europe, and we're not getting the GTX, at least not in its revealed variant.
That's true. It'll launch in Europe this summer.
So a hot hatch electric Volkswagen. How cool is that? And of course, we're not getting it.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty typical. All right, let's talk about my favorite segment, big-ass SUVs. So let's define big-ass SUVs. There's really two categories, right? There's those that are like non-luxury, and then there's the luxury ones, basically defined by price. They all have 3 rows. Most of them, if not all of them, have all-wheel drive. They all have a low range, so they're off-road capable, and they all tow about 8,000 pounds. So the newest one, of course, in that segment is the Jeep Grand Wagoneer, and we went to the unveiling of that. So we'll talk about that last, as always. Mm-hmm. But let's start with the ones that people are buying right now that we also went to the unveiling of, that we've actually driven and we've actually gotten behind the wheel of and we've towed with. Let's just put them all in one big category, the Tahoe, the Yukon, and maybe even the Suburban, because let's face it, they're all related.
They are related, but certain models are bigger than other models. So, for example, the Suburban is a bigger Tahoe. Same thing with the Yukon. You got the Yukon and then the Yukon XL, with the XL being the super chunker, is what I'm going to call it. But a bunch of really cool engine options available. So you've got the 5.3s, the 6.2s, and now the 3-liter Duramax diesel, which is a really cool engine. And then on the luxury end of the spectrum, you've got the Denalis, the High Countries, and the Escalade.
So let's talk about kind of what GM has done to freshen them and make them new. If you recall, they have become bigger. Actually, if you're looking at a Suburban or one of the XL models, there is a huge amount of room behind the third row. So the biggest problem for a lot of folks was that if you have a 3-row, and now he's munching on my wire, lazy. He's very busy looking around, seeing what we're doing.
He wants to go to the park. I do apologize, ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Blazy is, he's all amped up. It's been raining here in Colorado, and he does not know what to do with the rain. This has been his first rainstorm in his life, I think.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit confused.
He's happy in the snowstorms, but not in the rainstorms.
Yeah, he's all befuddled with the rain.
But anyway, what I was saying was, you know, if you have a typical 3-row, then at best you could maybe put one of those airline roller bags behind the third row. But with the new GM products, There's a lot of room back there.
There is a ton of room back there. Exactly right. Even with a full suite of people in there, seven seats.
Yeah.
I think you can get to Tahoe and up to nine seats as well. Yeah, it's amazing the size of luggage you can fit anywhere in this vehicle. And it's now got independent rear suspension as well. So it used to be that the Tahoe and the Suburban were basically Silverados with a square on the back that you could fit more people in. But the new ones are pretty different than the pickup truck siblings.
Yeah, they're getting farther away from being basically just, you know, a version of a Silverado with an enclosed cab and an enclosed back bed with seats, right? Now they're becoming their own kind of vehicles. And so it's really good. And the feature I think that, you know, people really are talking about is that new sliding center console. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly. So the middle armrest will actually slide back something like 8 inches.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And then it reveals like a little cubby hole.
There's a hidden cubby. And then when you slide it back, you've got more storage for like groceries or a purse. You could put a purse down there.
Or a gun and a Bible.
Well, that's...
if you're in Texas.
That's not officially what Chevrolet says they're for. But yes, I do suppose that is what a lot of folks are going to use it for.
You can see him. He's laying on his back now, chewing on your shoe.
I know. He's having a ball down here as I'm trying to focus on Tahoes. Now, the Tahoe is available in a ton of different trims, ranging from High Country to Premier to Z71.
Yes.
The off-road one. RST, if you want one that looks more sporty.
And we've actually taken the Z71 off-road, and it was okay.
Yeah, it
remember,
did pretty
good. Remember, we took it up Webster Pass. And, you know, we were... you know, impressed by the big all-terrain tires that it came with. But let's face it, you know, if we were choosing one to probably go off-road, the Tahoe would, even though it's got the off-road package, would not be number one in my book. It just seems like, you know, it's off-road-y, but not like a Land Cruiser or perhaps like the Grand Wagoneer. Completely, you know, comfortable off-road.
It doesn't quite have the clearance or the angle that you need.
Approach. Yeah, we did on our video. We tried approach departure angles. There were some issues.
And I also remember we ran into limitations when it came to traction aids, like lockers as well. So that is something to keep in mind. It does have air suspension though, so you can get four-corner air suspension on the GM Twin. So you can jack them up and lower them down on the highway depending on the kind of terrain you're going over. Now, pricing wise, they start right around $49,000 for a base one. I think that comes with rear-wheel drive, though. Four-wheel drive is still an option on the Tahoe, and someone will let me know if I'm wrong about that in the comments, I'm sure. But 10-speed automatic transmission, variety of V8s. Which engine would you get?
I'd get the new straight-six diesel. I think that pairs nicely. In fact, we had it here with the Escalade?
I think we had it with the Suburban.
Was it in the Suburban? It was one of the big ones, yeah. Yeah. And this, of course, the Escalade also has that virtual... screen where you can see
the OLED.
Yeah, the
it's
camera.
Like 37. Yeah.
You can display
inches.
What's in front of the vehicle on the screen. And I think that one goes well over 100,000 now.
For sure. Yeah. Now, the 3-liter is a more expensive option, but it was really an impressive engine. There used to be something called the Duraburbs. Do you remember that? Where people would take Suburbans and then swap in Duramaxes, but the big Duramaxes. This is just a little one, so it's a straight six Duramax, but still very torquey. It pairs nicely with the big SUVs.
Yeah, you know, I think in general, diesels are dying in America. You know, it started with back in the 80s when GM put some really crappy diesels into their vehicles during the oil crisis, even the 70s. But I think Dieselgate didn't help. But now, you know, these diesels in these big... three-row, big-ass SUVs actually work really well. You know, they're in vehicles that take advantage of what a diesel is good for, which is good fuel economy, good torque, and that straight six is phenomenal. It's as smooth as it gets.
It's actually not as expensive as we thought it would be. So if you look at, like, an LT,
yep.
The 5.3 starts at $58,995. The diesel comes in at $59,990, so it's about $1,000 extra. And I would definitely consider speccing it. For some reason, you can't get it on the Z71, though. Remember, that was the weird thing? You can't get it on the off-road trim.
Yeah, the one thing I would say about all these is, you know, they're more premium, especially the Cadillac, right? That is certainly premium. You know, there's still a bit of cost-cutting in some of these vehicles. You can tell that there's some, you know, plastics that aren't, you know, up to snuff. But, you know, the nice thing about, like, the Tahoe Yukon brothers, I guess, is that they're kind of like everyman. Big American classic SUVs, right?
Right.
You feel like this is what GM knows how to build, and they know how to build it well.
And they're very good at it.
And they're very good at it.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
There's nothing like groundbreaking. I mean, okay, so air suspension, let's face it, a lot of vehicles have had it. Dang, the your Citroën there, right? DS.
Citroën.
Had hydraulic suspension. Going way back, so this is nothing groundbreaking, but it's just a solid, good choice for I think people who need that amount of room.
I agree, and it's pretty handsome. I like what they've done with the all new Suburban in the front end. It looks better than the old one. It's a little bit more aggressive. It's got those kind of cool little scoops on the side that funnel the air around the front wheels for aerodynamics. I probably would get the Tahoe because I can't imagine a world where I'd fill up a Suburban all the way. I mean, just the extra room is just
and the Tahoe nuts. Itself is massive.
I do think the GMC looks better, though. I think the Yukon has a better look. And I think the new Suburban is not as attractive as the old one, to be honest with you. The old one was really angular. The new one's more rounded. I really like the Escalades.
With the Escalade and with the Suburban, you're really getting into such big vehicles where you feel like you need almost a commercial driver's license. I mean, these are not going to be easy vehicles to park. Right, they're not going to be easy vehicles for anybody living in a city. They are going to be great for livery drivers. So if your job is driving people from the airport to wherever, that's a perfect vehicle. But otherwise, they are very big vehicles, and they are going to have their limitations.
I think that's a great point. Well, let's move on to the next choice.
Okay, let's keep going. I'll go down my list. So let's go to the oldest of these. Right, let's just skip to the Sequoia.
The Sequoia has been around since the age of the dinosaurs.
Yes, I think Toyota, they're very conservative. And once they design something and build it, they stick with it. Like the Tundra, the Sequoia, which is based on a similar chassis, has been around a long time. And it shows, Tommy. You get in the thing and you feel like you're in a vehicle from the previous, not whatever age of the dinosaurs, but certainly decade.
Certainly, it's one of the only vehicles with a Q in the middle of its name, which always makes our job difficult. But the Sequoia is an interesting option. So when you're talking about big SUVs from Toyota, you got the Sequoia and the Land Cruiser. A lot of folks think that they're very similar.
They're not.
They're so different. Yeah, so the Sequoia is basically, underneath, it's very similar in a lot of ways to the Tundra. And a lot of the running gear will be familiar if you're used to the Tundra, whereas the Land Cruiser is its own separate thing built in this special factory with white gloves, and it's $80,000.
In Japan, yes.
Yeah, whereas I think the Sequoia, it's built here in the States, right?
I believe so, yeah.
I believe it's built in the States, and it's much more affordable, starts at $50,000. It's much more family-oriented. It doesn't have all the crazy tech that the Land Cruiser does in terms of off-road capability, but it's still not a bad choice if you can afford the gas.
Yeah, I would say, if the Sequoia is your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, right? It's kind of the every man, every woman kind of go-to three-row SUV the Toyota builds. Then the Land Cruiser would certainly be your Caprice or more exotic sandwich, right? That's going to cost you twice as much. And I like the Sequoia. I mean, a couple of years ago, maybe a year ago, I got the – no, a year and a half. That whole COVID year is flushed. But so let's call it a year and a half ago. I got to go and take it off-road. It's actually very capable off-road.
Ish. It's not a Land Cruiser.
It's not a Land Cruiser.
I don't think it has any kind of lockers either. I don't think even the TRD Pro. So they do a Pro version.
Right.
That one is more of appearance than anything else.
Yeah. But you feel like this is the kind of vehicle where you could stuff the soccer team in and with their cleats and you wouldn't worry about it. It just feels very rugged and very kind of well screwed together and very well defined for that segment. It's kind of right in the heart of that segment.
The interior is pretty poor.
Well, I would call it honest and basic.
I would call it pretty poor.
Or dated.
Yeah. I mean, it's
a lot of plastics, a lot of like big buttons, big dials, right? I mean, it basically is a Tundra in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely tell it's an older design, but it's usable. I mean, I will agree with you that it's very utilitarian, and
it comes in that really cool army green. I think that's what Toyota calls it. It's a really badass color.
You can operate all the knobs with gloves on, which is something nice. The third row is pretty good in the Sequoia as well, and it's going to last forever. It's got the 5.7 liter V8, the 3UR engine that is known for going to 300,000 miles with little to no difficulty. I mean, I like the Sequoia. I really do. I think in 2021 there are probably better options. Especially if fuel's starting to get expensive, 13, 17 is a hard number to swallow.
All these vehicles are going to have pretty hard numbers.
Not the diesel, though.
Like, that's why I said, yeah, outside of those, they're all going to have pretty bad. Look, the problem with the Sequoia, obviously, is that like when it first came out, I remember our neighbor at that time really lusted after the thing, right? It's gone way past lust factor. It's kind of, it's gone into its middle age and beyond now. And so the good news there is you know what you're buying. dying. The bad news is it doesn't have the latest tech, even though it does have the latest safety tech. Katsuda has committed to that. But if you want, like, you know, the fancy big screen with all the functionality that comes with the latest and greatest infotainment, it's not going to have it.
I also think that the Sequoia has independent rear suspension, and the Land Cruiser is a solid rear axle, which is a pretty big... I think the Land Cruiser is a solid rear axle. I'm pretty sure about that. Independent front suspension. What?
I think you're right. Well, it's got the hydraulic...
No, that's the Lexus. The Lexus has the height adjustable. The Land Cruiser has springs. Now, let's talk about the Land Cruiser. It starts at $85,000. Almost no options, though. So they all come pretty much fully loaded. And they are going away.
Get it while you can. Especially that Heritage Edition with the old Toyota script across the back. It's pretty badass. Especially with those wheels. We just had it. We had the white one. I wasn't in love with the white one. I think is it a black one with like gold wheels?
I think on the Heritage, it might just be white and black.
Yeah, I think there's two colors, white and black. And then I think it has these like goldish or brownish wheels that are pretty badass. Look, the Land Cruiser for many people is the ultimate SUV. It's been around forever. In a way, defined the luxury SUV segment. And unfortunately, in America, it sells like 3,000 units a year, which is nothing.
They added new colors to the Heritage.
Oh,
I forgot, for 2021. Yeah, gray and silver metallic.
All right, there you go. And of course, it's got those iconic seats in the back that fold down in kind of a funky way, which makes them look really cool, but makes them not very usable.
Not the Heritage, though.
They got rid of the seats.
Rid of the seats on the Heritage model, even though that was one of the big Land Cruiser Heritage features.
Yeah, and they got rid of the seats and they made them more expensive. Go figure, Tommy.
Yes, they did. And that was, they said, for overlanding, because people were complaining about the seats taking up too much room.
So that's a 200 series, right?
Right.
We had the first one, which was a 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you talk about long in the tooth. I mean, here we are at 221, and the thing came out initially in its initial form, basically. I mean, they've updated it. They've given it a new fascia. They've, you know, made the interior a little bit more modern. But 2008 is when the original 200 series came out. And so, yes, it's definitely long in the tooth. Now, we have seen spy photos of the new... I think it's going to be 300 series, is that what?
Yes, right, but apparently it's not coming to the States is what we've heard.
Right, but we have gotten a bunch this week from Indonesia or someplace. Somebody got into like a factory and just took a whole bunch of pictures all over the place. And it looks very Lexus-like in some ways. It looks very kind of upright, big kind of very bold nose on the thing. You know, very different from kind of the more, let's call it slim and angular lines that are on the current one. And I'm not sure I like it. I think it feels a little too, all these are really squared off and you know, brawny. I'm not sure I love the new Land Cruiser, at least if that's going to be the look of it.
We'll have to wait for the official reveal.
Yeah.
I think Toyota's done a better job of keeping the Land Cruiser up to date than the Sequoia. I think it's got the 8-speed transmission. Sequoia still has the 6. The interior is a lot better on the Land Cruiser still, and they've added, you know, kind of more quality than
Look,
the Sequoia.
Dude, if I had $85,000 sitting around, I would buy one. I can't give you a better endorsement than that.
Well, but wouldn't you buy like a BMW X7?
No.
Or
buy the Land
a Defender?
No. Well, we bought the Defender, but...
Yeah, why? I mean, I understand that it's an incredible vehicle, and it's very, very reliable.
Because it's going away, and I feel like it's like the FJ, right? We just bought an FJ for $33,000 that was a 2014, right, with 50,000 miles. And those FJs have just gone through the roof. I think the same thing's going to happen to Land Cruisers. I think after it goes away, people are going to be like, oh, no big deal. And then give it 2 or 3 years, and people are like, oh, my God, I want a Land Cruiser. It's going to be one of those things, and it's going to go up in value. You will see that these Land Cruisers are going to appreciate because it's going to be the forbidden fruit. So like I said, if I had 85K sitting around, I'd buy one. I'd sit on it, especially the Heritage Edition. And I think usually, you know, you have to wait 30 years for the depreciation curve. But I think... 5 years from now, they'll be very valuable and they'll be very sought after. People want them because they'll be the thing that you can't have.
I completely disagree.
All right.
I mean, they're going to be collectible in 35 years.
People no, maybe like 5 years.
Dad, it's $85,000. I don't think they're going to be $90,000
like
in 5 years.
Would have you guessed the FJ was going to become collectible?
But it's still 30. Ours is still not more expensive than it was when it was new. Some of the really low mileage ones, like one just sold for $60,000 with like 40 miles on it. If you didn't drive it ever and you had like the Trails team, they did become collectible.
It's following that same curve, right? They kept making the FJ in the rest of the world and selling it, and then they got rid of it here, and then people, because you can't import cars that are less than 25 years or younger here, right? It's going to become collectible. And I love the Land Cruiser. I think it's just a phenomenal vehicle. And I think the 200 series may turn out to be some of the best there is, especially, you know, when you get the last one of the bunch where you've got all the cool kind of off-roady bits, right? And that thing's meant to go 300. Anyway, I think we've done that to death. Shall we keep going?
Sure.
All right, let's talk about... before we get to the Grand Wagoneer, let's talk about, and the Defender, let's talk about the Armada, which is sitting in the office.
Yeah, so they just refreshed the Armada. They have changed the engine calibration a little bit. Andre was telling me all about the 5.6 now, has the same power output as the Titan. And they refreshed the styling. The front end is much better than the old one. The interior is nicer as well. It's got some of the latest Nissan tech, and I think they did a pretty good job with it.
I am so not on board with that car, Tommy. I'll tell you why. For some mysterious reason, and I do not get this, we started this podcast / video by saying I love these vehicles because they're roomy. This vehicle has very little room in the driver's seat for somebody 6'2". It's the only vehicle that I know where I've got the seat as far back as possible. And if you look at my knees, it's within maybe a half an inch of slamming into the dashboard on both sides. And on the left side, there are controls that I can't see because they're hidden by my knees. And I'm thinking to myself, as I'm driving this thing that doesn't get good gas mileage, why is there 1,800 feet of space behind me and yet I can't get comfortable and move my seat far enough back?
I did not experience that when I drove it. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm much thinner than you, though, so maybe it's a weight thing.
It's a weight thing.
Yeah.
The 235 pounds of extra weight payload, right, is causing that issue.
Yeah, maybe it's causing...
The seats won't go far enough back.
Yeah, maybe the seat is seizing under the load.
Thank you, Tommy. I appreciate that.
No, I like...
Also, it gets just horrendous fuel economy.
Yeah, okay. You can't say you love the Land Cruiser and would buy one. It's got the... I think it's got worse fuel economy than the Armada.
I don't think so. Look it up. I think the Armada's worst in class. Me and Andre were looking into it. It's worst in that segment. It's got the V8.
Does it matter if you're dealing with 13 or 14? Yes, what's the difference?
Does matter. It does matter because you can get a Tahoe with a diesel that gets it gets 10 mpg better.
I know, but the Land Cruiser's already so unfuel efficient.
What's the Land Cruiser?
I'll tell you in a sec. I think it's 14, 17.
Okay, 14, 17. And what's the Armada?
Armada, let's find it here.
Yeah.
I can't find it. Why can't I find it? Here we go. Armada four-wheel drive. It is not showing up. Great.
You can go to the government website.
That's what I'm doing.
EPA dot whatever the heck it is.
Yep, fueleconomy.gov. Yeah. Great site, by the way, to compare.
Yeah, you can compare two different vehicles.
Armada four-wheel drive.
It's got the 5.7, right? It's got the V8 out of the Titan.
Yeah, 7-speed automatic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better than the Land Cruiser.
Is it?
13, 18, 15.
What's the Land Cruiser?
13, 17, 14.
Okay.
So it's better.
They're both pretty.
So your argument is invalid compared to the Land Cruiser.
I said the Tahoe diesel, didn't I?
Yes.
Tahoe diesel to
You that. Can't be upset about the Armada fuel
economy. Also, look, they redid the interior,
It's
right?
gorgeous. It's really nice.
Oh, my God. No, I hate it. It looks so dour, so like...
It's good.
No.
It's got pleated... It's got diamond-stitched leather in the
looks,
one we
it
have.
It looks like... It looks so depressing and so like...
It's nice. What's wrong with it?
It's like they try to go and make it sophisticated by making it so serious. And like dowdy and just, you know, like we're
no.
very, very serious in here. And it's got this like really like dark and dark on dark on dark interior. Oh, my gosh.
I think it's really it's a nice interior. It's got the 12.3 touchscreen display now, which is at the top of the dash, angled a little bit weird. I don't love that. But it's got the latest and greatest in Nissan tech in it. Dual zone automatic climate control.
Here's
it's
my
got
other favorite feature. Have you driven it? Have you been in it yet?
Yeah.
How do you charge your phone?
There's a wireless charging tray.
Yeah, where is the tray?
It's underneath the cover.
Yeah, and it's a little cubby that you put your phone.
Yeah, it's a wood laden cubby.
I hate that feature. It's a little. It looks like a little big fat CD slot, so that when you put it in there, your phone is like hidden from view. Don't I want like my phone exposed so that if I get a text or something, I actually know that it's getting a notification. I'm not saying answer the text, but I'm just saying, or that I know that it's even charging. You don't know it's even charging. It's like, look, it's a little slot that's probably a half an inch where you stick your phone into it, and then it disappears. You don't know what the phone's in there, and you don't even know if it's charging.
So what's another vehicle that you just said you'd buy immediately if you had the money?
The Land Cruiser.
And where's the wireless charger in a Land Cruiser?
Is it in the refrigerator?
No, it's in a slot in the middle of the dashboard where you can't see your phone.
And I hate that. I was going to call out the Defender for the same thing.
The Defender's right in the middle. You can see it easily.
No, the Defender, the armrest covers half of it.
Barely. Look, Dad, I'm just saying.
And our Defender charger stopped working, by the way.
People hate on the Armada. People dislike the Armada because it's not a Land Cruiser. It's fine. It's a good vehicle.
I spent 4 hours driving it, and I was not a happy camper. I felt like it was, the driving dynamics were okay, right? So
they're good. It's comfortable.
No, it was extreme. No. That's not driving
the
dynamics.
The ride is super soft.
The
steering is super light. It's like a 1970s
Cadillac.
I was
super uncomfortable. I couldn't wait to get the heck out of there. If I could have, I would have swapped for one of our older trucks. Seriously, I would have. I was that uncomfortable driving.
Why were you so uncomfortable? Can you explain?
Because my knee is hit. I'm in a car that's 1,800 feet long, and I'm squished up against the front windshield. I'm driving it like your grandma because I can't get the seat enough. Look, dude, it's based on a full-size pickup. In a full-size pickup, I could take those seats, right, and push them as far back as I can, so far that I can't even touch the pedal, and the person behind me will have enough room to stretch out their legs. In this thing, right, my knee is, and my nose is scraping the windshield, my knee is scraping the dashboard. I'm sitting like your mom, right, driving the car with my face over the steering wheel because I can't get comfortable in it, for God's sakes. Can you make a bigger car with a smaller front seat? It's crazy.
Maybe.
It's absolutely crazy.
Did you try pushing the button to scoot it back?
No, I know, Tommy.
Did you try? Power seats. I know that in your youth you had to crank
the
seats back.
There was like a big crank that I had to crank to get the seat back. No, of course I did.
I know when you were growing up you had to scoot seats back with rocks and stones. But nowadays you can use the buttons to scoot the seats back.
Yeah, it committed the worst and cardinal sin ever, it was designed for people who are 5 foot five.
Not everybody has feet that are 19 feet long. So apart from the seating position, it's got a great engine, 5.6 liter V8, now with over 400 horsepower, I think, in the Armada.
Yes.
On premium fuel, you have to run the premium.
I said, look, the driving dynamics are fine.
Tows a lot of stuff.
Doesn't hold me.
No,
I just felt like I'm wasting all this space. What's the point of getting a big ass SUV when you don't fit in it? Come on, Nissan. Come on, Tommy. That's like big ass SUV 101, right? The reason people like big ass SUVs is because they feel comfortable in them. They feel like they can spread out.
Well, scoot the seat back. I will say the seat does not go back quite far enough on the driver's side. It could go back a little bit more.
And then the interior was like,
nice.
It was like black on brown. Oh my God.
Stitched leather. It's got stitched leather everywhere.
I felt like I was like 1858. You know, like I needed a top hat and, a bow tie to be properly dressed to be in this, stodgy interior.
Yeah, you're just,
nothing,
you
nothing,
are not classy
nothing,
enough.
There's
for
nothing
the,
youthful or fun or,
who cares?
Innocent.
It's a big.
There's like nothing innovative. I mean, there's really. Let's compare it to the Defender, okay? And I know these aren't really direct competitors, but once again, that's another three-row. The Defender is actually much bigger than most people give it credit for because it kind of, the styling makes it look smaller. But let's look at the Defender, right? The Defender, forget about, please just knock it off with the comments. Every time we talk about the Defender, it gets really tiring to see, all the reliability. We get it. It's a trope. It's a cliche. We understand the dependability. But let's just talk about design and design language, right? Which is a big part of why people buy vehicles.
Right.
Right. The Defender not only uses interesting materials, but has like a free floating screen with cubbies everywhere. I mean, it just feels open and airy, and it feels modern and youthful and young versus this feels like it was designed, for your grandfather's generation.
Oh, yeah. The Defender looks very good when you can be nice and comfortable.
Don't go there.
Look,
we're talking about
true.
Design language.
You have to go there.
We're talking about design language.
That is the most important thing about a car is it has
not,
to work.
Actually. I don't think so. I think design is more important than...
You would rather have a car look pretty on the side of the road than get you to your destination?
I think...
What does that mean? What does that even mean? It's a car. It has to go from A to B.
I think it's like left brain versus right brain, your heart versus your head.
So by that manner...
people buy the car like they buy, you know...
So is the Alfa Romeo Giulia...
their pie with their heart.
Is the Alfa Romeo Giulia the best-selling car in the United States? It's very pretty. It's very pretty.
That's a whole... Don't even go...
Different. No. Oh, that's different than the Land Rover that's broken down three times.
No.
I gotcha.
No.
It's true. It's true.
No. That's a whole different story. You're talking about a brand that hasn't been in America, that, you know, had a hard time in overcoming just even acceptance or a dealership network. There's so many reasons, you know, Alfa Romeo isn't selling beyond the fact that it has reliability
I love Land Rovers, Dad. They're my favorite vehicles of all time, but there's a reason that they had to kill the Discovery name.
Tommy, think about that. They had to kill the name of
a brand because it was so unreliable.
Every Defender is almost sold out.
You
right
can
now.
Get a Defender.
No, you can't.
You can get them. And if you can't
Tommy, a month ago, you could get them.
First of all, Dad, you can't get any new car right now. There's been a huge shortage of new cars.
You can't get Defenders. I've talked to like three people recently. I've actually did some research and I've talked to dealers and you can't get Defenders.
Is it because of the chip shortage?
Well, everything's because of the chip shortage.
But
you can go. Look, you can go to the Land Rover dealership and pick up a Discovery.
Well, that's because nobody wants a Discovery.
You can go pick up a Range Rover. You can go pick up, you know, a Range Rover Sport. But you will not get a Defender. They're so popular.
It's a cool car, and I think they'll sell a lot of them. It's a really cool car. But I think for a family, why would you get a Defender over an Armada?
Because it's cool and it has...
Does that matter when you've got three kids and you're worried about getting them off the trail?
For God's sakes, Tommy, it's not. They're not always going to... You know, I mean, we had a first-year vehicle with a unique problem and you can't, like, draw with a broad brush. Oh, go buy a Defender. It's guaranteed to break down. Yes, there were issues and there are issues, but it's, you know, you couldn't sell the car in America that wouldn't get you and your family to the store and back.
I think Fiat sold a lot of cars in America that wouldn't
today.
Get you. Yeah. Uh-huh. I it's a great car, Dad, but I'd love to see what the long-term reliability is.
I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, I think if you wanted to base your buying decision on long-term reliability, then definitely go get an Armada. I think that car is probably going to have, because let's face it, it's been around a lot longer and it's been refreshed.
Yep.
Right? So that 5.7 is not new. There's nothing new, right?
5.6.
5.6, sorry. The Toyota has a 5.7, right? So the Defender that we have has a brand new straight six hybrid 3-liter. A 3-liter?
Turbocharged.
Turbo supercharged 3-liter. So it's brand. I mean, it is. It's right. The Armada's engine and powertrain is ancient. It's going to be much more reliable. If you want reliability, don't get the newest thing. Don't get the first year. Wait for the last year of production. You are going to have a much more reliable car, I promise, truck.
All I'm saying is if I was shopping for a fun car, reliability wouldn't be at the top of my list. Like if I'm getting a two-seater or you know something to bash around off-road, I don't really care.
And the Defender is much better off-road.
Yes, I agree. It is way better off-road. But if I am looking for a family hauler, which is why people buy three rows, and to tow your boat... I think reliability would be at the very top of my
list. Well,
that's
fine. I'm just saying that's fine. You know, you could have that vehicle and have it be reliable, and that's why some people buy Defenders and some people buy Armadas.
I'm just saying
for somebody of my size, it absolutely doesn't work, and I'm just astounded that you have a car that's so huge with so little room for the driver. It's incredible. All right, let's move to the newest one, probably the one that people are the most interested in, which is, of course, the Grand Wagoneer. And we can talk about, I guess you could talk about the new Grand Cherokee, right, the three-row, the XL, which has also been unveiled.
No, that's smaller.
Yeah,
it's not in this class. Let's talk about
the Grand Wagoneer.
Well,
and the Wagoneer.
It's very confusing. Yeah, so there's the Jeep Wagoneer is the cheap one with the 5.7 Hemi.
Yeah.
Cheap, quote unquote. And then the expensive one is the Grand Wagoneer with the 6.4 liter Hemi.
Right, and they both are three-row SUVs.
Yes.
They both look very similar.
Yes.
Now, the difference between them is not only the powertrain, but the Grand Wagoneer has a much more upscale interior.
It is, yeah, and that's more like, think Escalade, Navigator.
Right.
Wagoneer is going to be more Armada, Tahoe, maybe Suburban kind of deal.
Exactly. But they are very similar. I mean, there's no difference when you look at them from 50 feet away. You'd have a hard time telling them apart.
Not in terms of pricing, though, because I think the Wagoneer starts at 50-something?
Right.
52, I want to say. And the Grand Wagoneer starts at, 80?
Yes.
So it's a lot more expensive. So in terms of pricing, you know, you're talking about a whole different league. Looks-wise, pretty similar. I'll give you that. Interior, more or less similar. The Grand Wagoneer is nicer than the standard Wagoneer.
So the Grand Wagoneer has like 5, or is it 8 screens, right?
It's got, oh, it's some crazy number.
It's got all this tech, air suspension, tows, I want to say at least 8,500, has that big Hemi that produces over 400 horsepower, if I recall right.
Oh, 60,000. So it starts at 59.
Yeah.
For the standard Wagoneer, 60 to 75 is what I'm reading right here, which is $30,000 less than the Grand Wagoneer.
And we haven't driven them. Nobody's driven them yet. We did go have a special preview, thanks to Jeep in Detroit, where we got to crawl over them. And I think, you know, I think this segment, I would have said a month ago, is going to be red hot. Now it just may be hot. The problem, of course, is fuel economy, because gas prices are going up. And if the economy, if the world economy keeps booming because of, you know, we're getting out of this COVID mess, then fuel prices are going to go up. And at some point, right now, I think they've gone up like maybe 10, 15% here in Colorado. But if you start getting a gas at over, in California now, it's already over $4 a gallon. Here it's over $3 a gallon. If you get to like over $5 a gallon nationally, then all of a sudden, these vehicles are going to be a little bit less desirable because it's going to cost so much to fill them up.
I don't think that they look that good, to be honest with you.
What,
I
all of them, like, or just the Wagoneer?
No, the Wagoneer and the Grand Wagoneer. I don't like the painted B and C pillar. It kind of makes it look like a shuttle.
Yeah, it's over my left shoulder, right shoulder.
I think the front's great. I do really love the interior. The interior is super nice. I like the 5.7 and the 6.4. Those are both pretty solid engines that have been around for quite some time now. But yeah, we're going to have to get our hands on them and see what they're like in the real world, to see what they drive like and how they tow. I mean, towing's 9,000 pounds or some ridiculous number.
Yeah. So, you know, our experience has only been, like I say, crawling into them, sitting in them, you know, playing with the controls, but never having actually, you know, put our foot in the accelerator or touch the brake. And that's coming very soon, because they are coming very soon to a Jeep dealership near you. Yeah, if you're wondering about the Fords, like I said, we haven't driven a Ford in a long time. So there is, you know, a bunch of big Fords that we could talk about.
The Expeditions.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly, of the world. But, you know, I wanted to keep this fresh in my mind. You know, we drive a lot of different vehicles. So sometimes, like I only have room for like maybe 7 of them in my head. And when I drive the 8th one, the last one on the list, the first one on the list falls off. So, yeah, I want to keep it kind of cool and new and fresh. Anything else that we're missing in this big that we've had here at the office?
I'm sure we are, and the comments will let us know below.
Yeah, I mean, we had the Lexus too.
Oh, yeah, the LX. Yeah, that's good. That's also, it's kind of like a Land Cruiser, but a little bit fancy.
It's very similar. It's got a little bit more like chrome.
Yes, a lot more chrome and a little bit less off-road worthiness because of the low-hanging front end.
Yeah, the front end is, you know, very squared off and very boxy, and so it wouldn't have a great approach or departure angle.
And then the other one in that class is the Infiniti QX80, which we haven't driven in a long time.
Yeah, and we did have the Genesis here, but that was a smaller one.
GV80 smaller.
Right.
Yep. And then on the luxury end, you've got the GLS and the X7 and the BMW Mercedes offerings, but those are a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, we did have the Maybach here.
Yes, that was $200,000+.
Once again, a whole like different ball of wax. I don't think anybody's going to be using that particularly to go off-road, maybe to go to the soccer game if you live in Beverly Hills, but that's a very different vehicle. That's the kind that kind of says, look at me. And the G-Wagon doesn't have 3 rows.
No, G-Wagon's a different ball of wax as well. I mean, it's a big thing here in the United States. If you're not a listener abroad, maybe these body-on-frame big bricks are not very, very practical. But for big families who want to tow their boats to the cabin, then yeah, these are a really popular choice.
All right. Well, let us know in the comments below which of these you'd have. Which would you have, Tommy?
I would have, I would probably take the new Tahoe. I really like the Tahoe, especially with that little diesel. I think that was a really interesting choice. Good interior. It's expensive, but pretty good fuel economy. I love the power, and I do like the diesel clatter.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
My heart says Defender, but my head says Land Cruiser.
There you go.
Well, guys, thanks for listening and thanks for watching. Remember, check out tflcar.com for what, Tommy?
News, views, and real-world reviews and independent and honest reviews.
Yeah, Blazy fell asleep completely.
Yeah, right at the end. I do apologize for all the distractions
here. He is dead out. Look at him. He's just loving life right now. I wish I could. You know, there's something about a dog sleeping that just calms you so much. I am now as chill can be. All right, see you guys next time. Ciao.
Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.